speaking, there's no reason that he should. But the king's position almost invariably was a very powerful position. And it was only given over to people who the king trusted implicitly, because in that stage of medicine in the world, going to a doctor literally was semi-suicidal. I will not comment upon our world, but in that world it certainly was. And it would be extremely easy for the king's physician to get rid of the king. Medicinally, that also made the job a very dangerous job. Most king's physicians did not survive the death of the king. And there were no malpractice suits in those days. And because of that, again, it was a two-edged sword. When I discuss the Rambam with you, we'll see one of his letters. The Rambam, who has a very subtle sense of humor, writes to someone that one should never undertake to be the physician of a king who is sick. If you got a healthy king, then you can afford to be his doctor, right? But if the guy really needs a doctor, then let somebody else be his doctor, because that really is the problem. Chasda ibn Shaprut gained the favor of this Abdul al-Rahman, this Arab potentate and king, and he became a very wealthy man and in his time the most influential Jew in Spain. And he also, just as I told you last week regarding Rav Shmuel Anogid writing to the Khazars in the Caucasus of Russia, he also wrote to them. He also sent emissaries to them. And he was engaged in a great deal of personal negotiation on behalf of the Arab king. Now, the Arab kings used the Jews as their emissaries to the Christians. They were afraid to send Arabs, to send Muslims. The very religious Muslims, the fanatical Muslims, would not at all deal with the Christians, because the Christians were infidels, the Christians were heathens, they were idolaters, and therefore they wouldn't even deal with them. The less pious Muslims were afraid that the Christians would kill them, as often happened, that representatives of the church, upon discovering that the king, the Christian king or the Christian prince, was entertaining or negotiating with Muslims, etc., would raise a howl of frenzy, of religious frenzy, and many ambassadors never got back home. And therefore, the Jews became the couriers. But not only the couriers, they became the negotiators. The Jews who weren't particularly impressed either by Christianity or Islam, were entrusted with these types of negotiations. And during the entire time of the reign of the Muslims in Spain, one of the reasons that the Jews occupied such high positions, and especially positions in what we would call the foreign ministry and the treasury, which had to do with trade, was because of the fact that the Jews were, in their own way, acceptable to both sides. And the Christians sent Jews to negotiate with the Muslims, and the Muslims sent Jews to negotiate with the Christians. And the fact that the person was a Jew, both sides had really already discounted the fact that the Jews would ever convert to their religion. And both sides felt that the Jews were a lost cause. And the struggle for supremacy in Europe was not between the Jews and the Christians or the Muslims. The struggle was between the Christians and the Muslims themselves. Therefore, the Jew became an acceptable person to negotiate with, to be used. And that's an institution that remains.